court is ready to hear argument in 030919 Western Investments, Inc. and others versus Maria Urena.
Mr. Brock Akers will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes.
May it please the court. A tenant-on-tenant crime with no notice of the dangerous proclivities of the criminal co-tenant should not visit liability on an apartment complex. And where a party cannot and does not establish any kind of evidence of conduct on the premises owner such that he could have prevented the sexual assault, summary judgment is absolutely appropriate. This case involves the tragic and unexpected sexual assault of a then 10-year-old mentally challenged boy, Leo Urena. Leo Urena has since passed away as a result of unrelated matters. This lawsuit continues with his estate and his mother. Michael Zuniga was another resident of this apartment complex. He was someone that no one had ever had any complaint about. He was someone that no one had any notion whatsoever that he had these pedophilia-like tendencies. These facts bear significantly on the fundamental issues of duty and causation which come before this court today. At the outset, I think that it is very important to discuss what I believe is a significant disconnect between respondent's position and that of the court below. It is fundamental to any discussion of causation that a plaintiff is able to establish but for evidence of a breach of duty which leads to an incident. Here, despite multiple opportunities, despite candidly being chastised every time we put pen to paper on this subject, there has not been one shred of evidence demonstrated or pointed out that would in any way indicate that the apartment complex failed to do something which might have prevented this incident.
Urena had some testimony, according to the briefing, that there was a lack of security. I think somewhere else it stated there were no security guards. There's a response to that that says, even if that's true, there's no tie to that in being able to prevent the unfortunate event involving the child here. What exactly did she say about the lack of security and no guards? That's in the record, I take it.
I mean, what are the facts, or what did Ms. Urena say?
What did Ms. Urena say?
Ms. Urena say, for purposes of summary judgment, that she didn't see, she thought that the security company had been replaced or had been fired and not replaced, and that she hadn't seen the security guards in some time.
And then your contention is that there's, even if that's true, there's no connection, no causation established between that and the incident.
Yes.
Does Timberwolf work in a case like this?
No, it doesn't. And the reason why it doesn't is that this is a whole different character of crime. A tenant-on-tenant type case does not lend itself to the Timberwolf analysis. It doesn't...
For example, if you had a high crime area, that's some indication that somebody's going to wander in from the outside and hurt somebody, but it's no indication really that the people inside are prone to violence.
Exactly.
Like to me.
Exactly. The whole nature of these third-party criminal act cases is that there is something inherent about the premises which makes it that the crime is able to accomplish, to be accomplished there. Not that crime generally is out there, but that there is something unique about the premises that makes crime available there.
Can one of the unique things about the premise be a human being that has a proclivity, for example, a pedophile or something? Would that qualify?
Yes.
And is there evidence here that previous security guards knew about Zuniga and thought him to be dangerous to women on the premise?
No, there is absolutely no evidence. There was confusion on that subject, and which was subsequently I thought, taken care of. There was the, in this case, what we came to describe as the mole man. The person that had a distinctive mole and a distinctive haircut that had been that they had worried about, thought was odd in some way. Later we came to find out in the course of the case and through the proceedings that the mole man was not Michael Zuniga. So no, there is no evidence and of anything that relates to Michael Zuniga, the pedophile. Justice Raul Gonzalez wrote in Doe versus Boys Club that the test for cause and effect is whether the negligent act or omission was a substantial factor in bringing about the injury. It is not enough that the conduct merely makes an injury possible. One must show that the negligence was the natural and probable result of the injuries. To correctly establish a breach of duty, that which is outlined by the Court of Appeals, there the Court of Appeals would necessarily be required or ought to have demonstrated these factors as having caused the sexual assault on young Leo. However, when we look at the factors considered specifically by the Court of Appeals, they do not answer that question at all as to how this incident could have been prevented. First is the subject that Justice Wainwright mentions, that being whether or not there was security. Indeed, the summary judgment evidence is that there was no security there that Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. However, implicit and presumed within that opinion is that somehow, some way, security would have made a difference, that there is something about the presence of security which would have somehow or another affected what went on inside Michael Zuniga's apartment. Yet there is no evidence to suggest that there's anything about security which would have made any difference. Without that evidence, summary judgment is appropriate. Second, the Court of Appeals strangely points out that the apartment complex was guilty of not having obtained prior police reports. Interestingly, they talk about the Timberwalk case as being the standard by which the case ought to be decided, and Timberwalk specifically says that a premises owner need not go out and get police reports and be aware of all that sort of crime. But even if they had, there would have been nothing about those particular police reports would have placed them on notice of this incident and would have in any way affected Michael Zuniga's conduct. Third, I point out that there were missing documents in some of the tenant files. There's no evidence that there were any missing documents about Michael Zuniga, and in fact, Michael Zuniga, if they had, the record is undeveloped as to whether or not there was a criminal background check, but the record before the court was that a criminal background check did take place as to Mr. Zuniga after, and we know what it would have revealed. It would have revealed that Michael Zuniga in 1992 had a driving while intoxicated. In 1993, he was driving without a license. Those things would not have placed anyone on notice that he was in any way likely to commit these acts. Now, this case is not the typical third-party criminal act at all. We aren't talking about an incident where a fence or a proper lock or lighting might somehow or another deter an evil doer. This incident happened inside an apartment over which the apartment complex had no control. A criminal who commits a criminal act inside a premise over which he has control ought to be subject to different standards. But yet the Court of Appeals is intent on describing this as one a typical premises liability case. Okay, let's do it. If this is indeed a typical premises liability case, a plaintiff has the obligation of showing that there is a dangerous condition of which the premises owner had actual or constructive knowledge and failed to act reasonably to do something about it. The defect here is Michael Zuniga. He is the sicko who was the defect on the premises. The same guy who jumped out the back of the window, never to be seen again when the police came to come and get him. The defect is not a generalized environment in this case. The defect is this individual. And therefore, if we're going to use these typical premises liability standards, we ought to look to see whether or not there is any evidence of notice, actual or constructive, that the apartment complex could have in any way predicted that this man had these tendencies, that he was a defect. And of course, there isn't any of that evidence here. And that is why the Doe versus Boys Club analysis is so significant, because there, no amount of checking would have made any difference in that case. Here, no amount of checking would have made any difference in this case. Therefore, no notice, no premises liability, prima facie case.
If a similar incident had occurred a week after this incident, would your position change about the apartment's obligations?
Had it occurred a week after? No. Because anything that occurred after wouldn't have placed us on notice of what occurred at the time.
Now, would your position about the second incident, if you were involved in that one, have changed? There's some notice, at least.
If there was a second incident involving Michael Zuniga?
No.
Or some other sicko?
If either. If there was a similar incident a week later, and you're the lawyer involved in the second incident, involving a different tenants, entirely different tenants, but the same apartment complex, would your position change?
I think that my position as to whether or not Timberwalk applies or whether or not...
And the outcome of the case.
And the outcome of the case. Well, it would be a totally completely different analysis as to whether or not the apartment complex had acted prudently with that notice in order to provide notice. Part of my, I don't believe in any of these cases. So it's hard for me to acknowledge that anyone can ever predict random crime. When Michael Zuniga is gone or theoretically caught, one of these other incidents, is a wife stabbing her husband. She's in jail. That doesn't provide evidence to anyone that some other husband and wife are likely to stab each other in their apartment, in my mind.
Would you agree that in my hypothetical, the apartment would have some obligation to do something, and not just nothing, and let another incident happen a week later that's similar?
I think that a standard of care, which I am aware in the apartment industry, is that they would provide notice to the tenants that this had occurred.
So, to a large degree, your position here turns on notice. Your position in this case?
Yes. Usually turns on notice.
Which informs duty and causation?
Yes. If we look at the Timberwalk analysis, though, presuming I'm wrong and the Timberwalk ought to apply, Timberwalk requires a similarity of crimes. The reason is, as I said, that the nature of foreseeability requires an analysis of the premises itself. What about that gives rise to that particular crime? And there ought to be a nexus between the type of crimes that give rise to that foreseeability and that which is complained about. Here the Court of Appeals looked at the 8 crimes that had occurred in the prior 3 years. They characterize them as violent. These 8 crimes, however, we know, involved 1 domestic disturbance, 1 hate crime, an adult-on-adult attempted sexual assault, 3 nighttime robberies, and 2 very strange murders. None even remotely resemble the sexual assault on a child at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning. The duty imposed on a premises owner relating to the criminal acts of third party exists where the crime is of the character complained about that could be reasonably anticipated. There needs to be something about these crimes to suggest, for one shadow of a second, that this incident could be predicted, but it's not there. Instead, the Court of Appeals characterizes all of these crimes as violent and says, since all of these crimes are violent, and this is a violent crime, it falls under that umbrella. Well, that is akin to saying that once there has been a history of some violent crime on the premises, all of a sudden you become an insurer for those premises without any looking at what the nature of the crime might be. For instance, what about an act of terrorism? Would the apartment complex be responsible for an act of terrorism on its complexes, because in the past there had been these 8 incidents of violent crime? That doesn't make any sense, of course.
Mr. Akers, how much weight should we place on the policies recommended by the Red Book? The Court of Appeals talks about that some. You mentioned that Timberwalk indicates that there's no duty to go out, assuming that Timberwalk applies, and have the apartment get police reports. Red Book recommends getting police reports, and the apartment complex here says that they follow the Red Book, but they didn't get police reports. To what extent should that weigh into our decision?
Yeah, absolutely not.
To what extent should that inform the duty that the apartment undertakes?
Well, there's a difference between a legal duty and a standard of care that an industry might adopt. If the Red Book suggests that sort of thing, it makes sense that one go about that. When I appear to the trial court for summary judgment purposes, I say, no, we didn't do that. I have no legal responsibility to acquire that. If I find myself in front of a jury, I'm going to have to explain myself. So those are two different things. Here, in this case, it makes absolutely no difference whatsoever, because here it couldn't possibly have had anything to do with this incident.
And even if they got police reports, you've talked about the ones that they would have obtained, and background information on Mr. Zuniga, you say, wouldn't have led to any notice about his propensity to regard children. I understand that. We often, though, however, take a close look at industry practice in determining the duty of industry actors, don't we? Under the theory that they should know what they're doing and what they should be doing, perhaps with more expertise than the court would bring to bear on the issue. So should it be have absolutely no weight in determining the apartment duty or some?
No. Well, I think that it ought to be a consideration, surely, but what especially in these days and times of looking over one's shoulder at being sued, not by what is reasonable or not reasonable, what is appropriate conduct and what is not appropriate, but instead making sure that you are not going to find yourself the unwitting victim of a lawsuit, and therefore causing someone to take extra and additional steps, such as might be recommended in the Red Book, that is one thing, as opposed to what ought to be a legal requirement, as has been recommended by this court in Timberwolf.
Thank you, counsel. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. James Liston will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, I'm here today for the respondent. I want to respond quickly to what was said by petitioner's counsel. First, he said there was no notice of the dangerous proclivities of Mr. Zuniga. There is evidence of the dangerous proclivities of that man. If you'll bear with me, there's 2 sentences in our response to the summary judgment. It's page 6 of our response to summary judgment. It's in the record. In addition, one of the witnesses testified that the assailant, it's Mr. Zuniga, had a reputation for seducing boys by drugging them and taking advantage of them. See relevant portions of the deposition of Olga Gramado, that's Leo's aunt, attached hereto as Exhibit 8, pages 63 through 72. Because the residents, that should be residents, were quite familiar with the assailant, see also Exhibit 3, that's the deposition of Gisela Rodriguez, friend of the family, at page 30 to 31, the jury can be allowed to presume that the management, by way of circumstantial evidence, knew of these propensities as well.
How?
The testimony, I believe, of Ms. Rodriguez was that she went in and talked to Katie Michon, the apartment manager, and Ms. Michon said, well, we're aware of the family and we'll look into it. So there's more than a circumstantial evidence. She did, Ms. Rodriguez did speak to someone with the apartments and talk to her about Mr. Zuniga. So there is some evidence that the apartment complex had been made aware of the actual Mr. Zuniga and what he was doing. And the words used.
After or before the incident?
Lived with Ms. Rodriguez, it was before the incident or right around the time with Ms. Who was the other witness? Gramado talked, Olga Gramado spoke after.
So first she said the jury should be allowed to infer that this knowledge that the tenants had got to the management. And then when you were asked by Justice Heck, you said there's some evidence that Rodriguez talked to the apartment management. So,
in her deposition, both of the women that I got quoted from did speak to the management. One of those was at a time after Leo had been assaulted. They went to Ms. Katie, Ms. Michon, or Micon, and told them about what had happened. And why didn't you call the police or what have you. And then on another occasion, I don't believe the record's specific as to what time it was, but she went to Ms. Michon and said, you know, there's this person here, this Zuniga, and what's also clear from the record is that the tenants were certainly aware. The family of Leo was aware from word on in the complex was that this Zuniga had been assaulting boys in a similar fashion.
Then why in the world did they let him walk across the street by himself?
Well, they had two women there that morning watching him. And
when he walked across the street.
He did what he shouldn't have done. He was 10 years old and a mentally challenged young man.
Court of Appeals, as I recall, could be wrong, doesn't talk about this deposition testimony you've just cited to us that purports to put the apartment complex on specific notice of, if not Zuniga, of the family, I think, as you said. That seems pretty fairly important.
I can't answer why it's not in the Court of Appeals' opinion. They do not quote it. That is true. What they do talk about, what I think is important, about the issue of police reports. Our argument is not, and the Court of Appeals' opinion is not, the argument that this complex should have gone down and received a police report on this individual before he checked in. The case of Doe against Boys Club finds that is not a case in fact. So that's a dead on arrival issue. What they're talking about here in the opinion is police reports from the area, and that's what we're talking about too. If the testimony of these two ladies that I summarized, one mentions that she called the police, and the evidence we believe shows that had the apartments been requesting police reports about incidents going on in the area, it would have been more likely than not that Zuniga's name and activities in that area would have come up. We're not making the argument that they should have checked his police record before, which is basically admitted, page 99 of the record, that he had a clean record other than
EWI. Well, then how would they come up?
I'm sorry?
I'm not following you. Then how would they come up if you just checked generally more often? You said if you checked in the area more often, then his activities would be more likely to come to light. How would that be the case? If you called the police every day, you still wouldn't know.
Oh, if requesting police runs for the area,
yeah,
and they come back, well, a squad car went out to do such and such and such and such, and if Zuniga's activities that these ladies testify about in their deposition, if those were reported, then...
But they weren't, were they? I mean, I thought you came up...
We don't have evidence in the record of that. We have witness resident testimony that said from what they heard that he had been doing this type of activity in the English Oaks apartment complex.
What was the evidence that... What should the apartment complex have done that it didn't do that could have prevented this?
Done a better job of keeping tenant files. I think there's a strong, the Court of Appeals found that, just keeping tabs on the tenants, not spying on them, just keeping a folder on them.
What does the evidence show that had they kept a folder on Zuniga, what would that have shown about Zuniga?
It would have been more likely than not that his activity, he had a reputation, it's clear from the two ladies' testimony.
So all you have to do to get rid of your neighbors in your apartment complex is tell the manager, that guy's got a reputation for being a pedophile. That apartment complex has got to kick him out. That's going to cause all kinds of privacy, constitutional. That's going to be abused more than it's going to help, isn't it?
But if it's more than one, and if it's for, if the nature of the complaints is something that can be verified and then looked into.
Well, we can. We've looked, and there's no report, no police report, any government record of any kind that Zuniga's ever done anything like this. So you're just, but what your position is, if one neighbor completely makes up a reputation about a bad guy, the apartment company's got to kick him out.
No, that's where the police reports, the police runs come in, because it's a misdemeanor or some kind of violation of law. If I call the police on an apartment neighbor and say, oh, he's a bad person, and I'm going to, you know, call the police, and there's a prohibition or a penalty on me for doing that. So, yes, a tenant could conceivably run down to the apartment manager and make up a story, but the police runs, I would submit, are different.
But there wouldn't be any on Zuniga.
There aren't any in this record.
That's my question. What's in the record that says, here's what the apartment complex should have done or not done that might have prevented this?
The need to keep better file, better information on the individual tenants. Are you talking about generally or very specific?
Well, would added security guards have prevented this? What's the evidence that would have stopped this incident that happened inside the apartment?
I don't know if under Timberwalk we're required to show specifically that the security guard would have been right there on the scene Saturday morning. So that would have made it less likely.
There's got to be some evidence that the actions that you fault them for not taking would have prevented this from happening. And I think we're trying to find out where is that evidence here? Is it in an expert report how can we make that determination?
Go back to the Red Book. The Red Book talks about what a department owner should do. One of the things is get periodic police runs on other crimes that have happened in the area.
Let's say there had been police runs on Zuniga. Let's say that you had found three reports that said complaints have been made about him in this regard. What then with the apartment complex? What would they then have to do?
Tell their security guards to keep a little bit closer eye on Mr. Zuniga and possibly start looking into him more closely to consider whether they want him to keep living in that complex.
Is that evidence in the record?
Did that happen? No, that was a hypothetical, Your Honor. The way the Court of Appeals addressed the case, as you recall from their opinion, they determined we did not have an ordinary negligence cause of action, found that the claim that we stated fell squarely within Timberwalk, and then applied the five standards of Timberwalk. And as a published opinion, I'm quite confident a comparison of the facts in this case with the facts of Timberwalk reveal that Timberwalk has been faithfully followed and that the facts of this case fall within Timberwalk as a matter of law. We have to go through those quickly. The location where the crimes happened. Timberwalk was a case, like many, that were using general crime in the area, bad part of town type argument. this case, we put 8 police reports in the record, and 7 of them were actual crimes that happened there on the property. So this wasn't a case where we were saying, well, it's in a bad part of town, therefore they should watch out for things generally because it's a bad part of town. These were property-specific crimes. 2, the recency. We went back 31 months before the incident. The incident was November 1999. That ties into the frequency. There was 2 crimes in 97, 2 crimes in 98, and 4 in 1999, trending upwards. The similarity, that's I think what the petitioner hit on. And in their briefing, they're quite clear. They want to say this is far different. The sexual abuse of a child is different because it takes place in a private place and all of that. However, Timberwalk itself teaches that it's what the similarity aspect is addressing violent crimes to the person. They're not Timberwalk is not interested in domestic violence. That's much less probative, or let's say nonviolent crimes if somebody's committing counterfeiting or something, what have you, in the apartment complex. To quote Timberwalk, a string of assaults and robberies in an apartment complex makes the risk of other violent crimes like murder and rape foreseeable. On the other hand, a spate of domestic violence in the complex does not portend third-party sexual assault. That's at 758 of Timberwalk. So that's a key point I know petitioner made, but we submit that these crimes are similar, and the similarity is that they're violent crimes against the person, against the tenants. 5, the publicity. Kate Michon, she's the apartment manager. She testifies in her deposition that she's aware of the murders. That's around about page 100 or 102 of her deposition. So the publicity, unlike a lot of cases where they're relying on, this was reported on the news, therefore the complex should have known, it's none of that. This is the apartment complex. The lady running the place was aware and testified she was aware. So the publicity is there. I do believe this case comes back to the second. Once we have our Timberwalk established, okay, where do we go? I believe that's the Mellon decision of this court. We just don't stop at Timberwalk and say, well, that's fine, they're liable. There has to be a duty, to quote Judge Cardozo, there's no negligence in the air. Something that these defendants did has to, the breach of duty has to go back to the foreseeability we've talked about. And the foreseeability, I believe this case it satisfies everything that Mellon, all the concerns in Mellon, because we have a foreseeable victim, a tenant. I talked about the classes, the classifications of the victim. Well, she would be a licensee. She certainly has the right and should be expected to be there. And Leon also, of course, is on the application for rent. So both of the victim especially, is foreseeable. The foreseeability of the assailant, that's what I started with. He is a tenant also, that's admitted. And his proclivities are known certainly to Ms. Rodriguez, members of his family, and the tenants. And one of them said that she did talk to the apartment manager about Zuniga and what Zuniga was doing. So that's where the foreseeability comes in. What should they have done? Should have had better contacts with tenants, had better contacts, kept better tabs on tenants to find out that one of them was a very bad apple and doing these specific things. The foreseeability of the actual crime, if you read what Ms. Rodriguez, Ms. Grimaldi, Olga Grimaldo, what she says is she was actually aware that the man was a homosexual pedophile and preyed on young boys, or 21 or 22. So in this case, when we apply the Mellon analysis, there's a foreseeable victim, a foreseeability of the assailant, some evidence, enough to surpass summary judgment, that Zuniga, that they had been told or that they should have known at the complex about Zuniga and what he was like, and also certainly about what type of man Zuniga was. To sum up, the First Court of Appeals correctly applied the Timberwalk analysis and found that the general possibility of violent crime would be foreseeable, and then it applied the duty analysis and found that the specific duties, that's the last paragraph there, the second to last paragraph of the appeals opinion, they found that the duties that they breached, specifically the keeping of, the failure to keep such things as police runs and items required by the Red Book, that that relates back to this particular attack, and that that is why summary judgment in this case was improper.
No further questions. Thank you, Counsel.
I thought I knew this record pretty well. I don't recall anything in the record at all that established any notice or opportunity for notice of the apartment complex of any tendencies on the part of Zuniga prior to this incident. And in the 20 minutes, I tried to look through what I had, but I gave up. So if the record is there, I guess I stand corrected. But now, today, this moment, we have for the first time the evidence or the claim of what it is that the apartment complex was supposed to have done, and they were supposed to have kept better tenant files, and maybe on the basis of the reputation and the comments of these tenants, whether or not they were before or after, somehow or another we were supposed to have done something about that. Part of the problem is, in this record, that was not in any way presented to the trial court, even if it makes sense, or I'm sorry, that doesn't make sense, that somehow or another we're privileged to start kicking people out with whom we have a lease contract on the basis of someone saying something negative about them, and that means that we have a duty, and the failure to breach our lease contract means that we are liable in tort on down the road. That is illogical on its face. But nevertheless, this is the first time, and that was not present to the trial court. The trial court has the we owe it to our trial court to give him that form, and he just didn't have it. One of the things that counsel suggests is that a security guard is presumed to have made a difference. There's a case not cited that I'd like to bring to the court's attention. It's a California case. I'm reluctant to cite a California case. But it's Saelzer, S-A-E-L-Z-L-E-R, versus Advanced Group, 23 P3rd 1143. It's a 2001 case. It stands for the proposition that a plaintiff must establish by non-speculative evidence some actual causal link between the plaintiff's injury and the defendant's failure to provide adequate security measures. That's on page 7. That's in that opinion, and I will cite it to the court. That ought to be the law in Texas if it isn't. The Mellon case, which came out of a brilliant trial court, had a plurality opinion, which stands for the proposition that helps us, that stands for the proposition in the plurality, I understand, Justice O'Neill, that whether there needs to be a link between the conduct and the victim, and the risk and the victim. And here, there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever as to any suggestion that there could be a link in any way to suggest that poor Leo Urena was going to be victimized that particular day.
In a case when an outsider comes on the premises, you think Timberwalk works okay or not?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Timberwalk is great law. There's no reason for the court to revisit Timberwalk. It just doesn't apply to a tenant on tenant case. For instance, I mean, if for instance, there was no crime on this premises whatsoever, but Michael Zuniga was indeed a well-known pedophile that had all of these tendencies, had committed other acts inside of his premises, and the apartment complex knew about it, I think that they probably had a duty to say something about it. Yet, if we look at the timber walk analysis, it wouldn't get us anywhere near where we wanted to be, as to the ordinary duty of care of an apartment complex that would be in the Red Book as well.
Any further questions? Thank you, Councilor. That concludes our oral arguments for today, and the clerk will adjourn the court.
All right.